Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Alana Gordon. When you get a cut or scrape, you can often find the remedy in a first aid kit. But if someone's, you know, if someone stops breathing, you can administer first aid, such as CPR. But what about when the wound is internal, when it involves your mental well-being? Well, there are tools and a first aid kit for that, I'm told. Mental health first aid is a type of training that's been gaining traction around Kansas City and the country. And joining us to talk about the approach is Jermaine Alberti by phone with the Missouri Institute of Mental Health. Jermaine, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And Beth Yoderstein with Wyandotte Center. It's a community mental health center in Wyandotte County. Beth, you're leading some trainings throughout the region.
I am. Thank you, Alana, for having us.
And so, Jermaine, you've sort of been overseeing the training of the trainers, I guess you could say, throughout the state and elsewhere.
Yes, I'm a national trainer for mental health first aid, which means I travel around the country training in church's teacher program, and the mental health first aid training director for the state of Missouri.
So I'm really struck by this idea that when you have a medical emergency or there's often someone who's not necessarily a doctor or a health professional, there are these tools that we can be trained in to take on some of those things that come up. And I'm interested in that parallel and what this type of training, what this approach is about. How do you do that for your mental health, Beth?
Could we go to Jermaine first to talk Absolutely. A little bit about the history and how it was brought to the United States and then get into mental health first aid and how to recognize signs and symptoms?
Yeah, I'm a little curious at first, just like kind of the framework of what this even is about.
It's actually just an educational program. We're reaching out to the layperson and simply to educate them about what is mental illness, how do we approach somebody that we're concerned about. It may be somebody that is in our family, somebody that's in our work environment. We talk about anxiety, depression, suicide, traumatic events, psychosis, and giving people a little bit more information about what mental illness looks like and how to reach out and help somebody.
And so before we get into the history, this has been getting a lot of traction I've seen in Kansas City and around the country. What is that about?
I think there's a few things. People are talking more about mental illness and also the tragic events that are happening in the United States. It's bringing it to the forefront. People are wanting to know, what can we do to help? And people are afraid. When you talk about psychosis, we're taught to be afraid of psychosis. When if you look at the general population, 1 in 4 have a diagnosable mental illness. 18% have anxiety, where only 1% have psychosis. If you look at the mentally ill, not all violent events happen by people who are mentally ill, nor are mentally ill violent. Mm-hmm. And they're usually the victims. And so bringing that education to the course and helping people understand what is mental illness.
So, Jermaine, you've been kind of involved in this type of approach for quite some time. How did this start?
Well, Mental Health First Aid started in 2001 in Australia by Betty Kishner and Tony Jerome, and it came to the U.S. in 2008 by Missouri Department of Mental Health, Maryland Department of Mental Health and Hygiene, and the National Council for Behavioral Health Care, and they all seen a need to do some kind of public education program that would increase mental health literacy. And so since 2008, we have been doing this program across the country and are celebrating 70,000 people now trained to provide mental health first aid around the country. And in Missouri, 6,000 plus folks are trained in this program. So starting in Australia, it's in 17 countries now, is in the U.S. since 2008. So we're really excited about the work we've done in the past 5 years.
How did you get involved in this?
You know, I got involved, one of my CEO of my company said, "Hey, Jermaine, I got a training called Mental Health First Aid. Would you be interested in doing it?" And I never knew how impactful this program would be in my life, both personally and professionally. So I was a training director at a local community mental health center and got involved as part of my job. But it has now just been the greatest opportunity to help reduce stigma, promote recovery, and increase mental health literacy.
How has it impacted you personally?
Well, I had a loved one, my mother, who had a stroke, and after that stroke developed depression, and that depression just had a major impact on her life, became very debilitating, and just being a caregiver and trying to take care of her not having mental health first aid, I think, would have made that job a little harder. But really understanding that what she was dealing with was a real illness and that it was treatable was very helpful. But as Beth talked about, when you look at depression versus a person having a symptom of psychosis, it's kind of scary. How do you work with that as a family member? So this program gave me the courage and gave me the ability to help my mother out.
So what are some of the tools when you think about when you open up your first aid kit? I see Band-Aids, things like that. When you would open up your mental health first aid kit, what sort of tools would you see in there?
So I would say when you open up this toolkit, you would have a pair of binoculars. And the binoculars help you recognize signs of mental illnesses, as well as recognize symptoms of mental illness. So that would be a toolkit, a pair of binoculars, so you can see and recognize what's going on. But then you would have this, little notepad that you could write down all the warning signs and risk factors of a mental illness, and then really how do you help a person out. And the help is really through what we call an action plan called ALGI, which helps a person assist a person in non-crisis and crisis situations. And ALGI, real quickly, stands for Assessing for Risk of Suicide or Harm. The L stands for Listening Non-Judgmentally. The G for Giving Reassurance and Information. And then there's two E's, and those two E's are by encouraging appropriate professional help and encouraging self-help and other support strategies. So that kit would be signs and symptoms, risk factors, warning signs, and then how to intervene in crisis and non-crisis situations. So that would be your toolkit.
Wow, that's pretty full, I guess. Is the idea that then if you have these members of the community trained in something like this, is the idea that mental health crises can be prevented? I mean, what's the goal?
So mental health first aid really falls in the spectrum of early intervention and treatment. It's most effective in early intervention. So I recognize something's going on with a person. I get to the help they need, and that's the treatment pill. So that's the most important, most effectiveness, if you would say, with mental health first aid, is in early intervention and then connecting folks to the proper treatment. And that could be saying, this is a professional that can help with this mental illness. So we don't say that mental health first aid most definitely can stop someone from developing a mental illness, but most definitely equip folks to recognize signs and symptoms early enough to get a person the help they need.
Kansas City, have you ever been witness to a mental health crisis, and what did you do? We'd love for you to join our conversation. Is there anything you wish you'd done differently? Share your experiences and call 816-235-2888. Again, that's 816-235-2888, or you can post your comments to Facebook or Twitter. We're at KCURCST. So I'm wondering, Beth, you talked about this a little bit earlier, but there's been some more attention put on mental health in general in this country. But on mental health first aid, the president not too long ago endorsed the program. And so what sort of shifts have you seen here in the Kansas City area? And Jermaine, perhaps you can talk about in the region when it comes to the kind of spotlight being put on mental health, but in particular what this is meaning for a program like mental health first aid.
I think that mainly in our schools, because that's what President Obama addressed with the violence of the guns, but also, and they're reaching out, that's what we're targeting now, our schools and universities, where we're seeing signs and symptoms. And one of the examples I think is great in our trainings is the median age of onset for anxiety is 11 years old. We give people the statistics that 11 years old is a median onset for an anxiety disorder. So we're reaching out and giving people some education of what to look at earlier. We know that if we go in and intervene earlier, the recovery process is usually more successful, and giving people the tools to recognize it and deal with it instead of waiting until they're adolescents, young adults, and they've been suffering with symptoms for a longer amount of time and not having the tools to deal with it. So we're finding that the national news is bringing it to the forefront. People are talking about it, and people are wanting to do something. People are wanting to help, but how do you help? And that's where mental health first aid steps in.
Do you find – oh, go right ahead, Jermaine.
Well, I was going to say across Missouri and across the nation, we've heard on our listserv that the interest in mental health first aid has doubled in some cases and tripled in some cases. The calls that people are getting since President Obama cited Mental Health First Aid as a tool that can be helpful in schools with staff. So most definitely that announcement has brought greater attention to Mental Health First Aid. And I think that the program that President Obama spoke of was the youth version of Mental Health First Aid, which is for adults who work with youth 12 to 18. So I think it should be clarified that there are two programs, one for adults, which is a 12-hour program, and then one for youth, for adults who work with youth, which is a 8-hour program for 12 to 18. So the program that President Obama spoke about was youth mental health first aid for teachers and staff, but then there's the adult version also.
And, you know, one thing that I think about, 12 hours is a long time, and without going into kind of the 12 hours of this type of training, and in light of kind of in some ways how what this was a response to, do you find that people are how do you find that people typically address or often respond to a loved one that may be showing signs of needing mental health assistance or support? And what are some of the ways that you see this often in our communities being handled or not handled?
I think people are afraid to talk about it. I think it feels comfortable for us if a neighbor comes to us and says, I've been diagnosed with cancer. You automatically, what can I do to help? Can I bring you dinner? Can I mow your lawn? Can I do your laundry? Can I take you to the appointments? If that same neighbor comes to us and says, I've just been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, does it feel comfortable for you to offer those same things? One, what is psychosis? We don't know. And that's something about this training is that we talk about it and how to approach and how to help. And also getting the comfort level of how to reach out. One other thing that I like about this training, there are practical tools, practical exercises. How do you approach somebody? If you're afraid somebody is depressed and they're talking about suicide or are showing signs and symptoms of suicide, how comfortable do you feel going up to that person saying, do you want to kill yourself? One of the myths is that by saying that, you're going to encourage it. And that, again, is a myth. How do you approach somebody? So we talk that. We go through exercises. We'll put out a scenario, and we'll walk through the algae. We listen non-judgmentally. We're going to assess them first and see if they're at risk for suicide or harm. If they're not, then we do go into the L, which is listening non-judgmentally. That's really hard for people. When you don't understand something, how do you ask them, are you going to kill yourself, when I personally believe that that's wrong? You don't want to kill yourself. It's not about you. We're getting the people to talk about it's the person's journey. It's their pain that we're addressing. We're reaching out to them, and our goal is to help them through this journey. And how can we do that?
Again, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Alana Gordon, and our guests are Jermaine Alberti and Beth Yoderstein, and we're discussing first aid for mental health. I want to take a call now from Charlene in Kansas City, Missouri. Charlene, thanks for joining Central Standard.
Thank you for taking my call. My issue is I've been married for 21 years, and it's been up and down, and just recently, my husband's gone through a very bad year with a lot of depression, and he confided in me that he was suicidal and didn't want to tell anybody. And things got so bad that I finally went to my pastor and talked to them, and it was terrible feeling like I was ratting him out. It was like coming out of the closet with his deep, dark secret. And the other issue is I began getting online and looking at information, mental health, trying to find help for myself, trying to find help for my husband. And I started looking at bipolar things, going, wow, my husband fits everything for being pretty majorly bipolar. And I you know, talked to him about this and tried to confront him about this, and he doesn't want to admit it. I can't believe I haven't seen it. I look back now and I go, oh, my goodness, yes, my husband's bipolar. It's been 21 years. And this has been most of our up and downs have been because of this. But now he doesn't want to deal with this. I kind of had to force him to speak to people, make him go and confide in friends. You must tell people that you're suicidal, not just me. And then see a counselor. And then after seeing the counselor, he told me, I don't want to go back. I want to pursue alternative treatments, essential oils, and take vitamins. And now I'm left going, what do I do? His depression seems to be better because he quit his job, but that's just a symptom. After 21 years, I see the pattern, and I see the depression, and it's a, it, the job was just not, it's not what caused the depression. And he's kind of in a manic stage now where he has a new job and he's feeling better, so he doesn't see any of these symptoms any longer, because now that he's in a manic stage and he's out of his depression stage, he thinks everything's honky-dory. So I don't know what to do and how to really help.
Charlene, thanks for your call. I mean, Jermaine, I wonder about when you, in your experience, in terms of how do you address these situations, and feel free to speak as specifically to Charlene's situation or what you're comfortable with. But when, I mean, these situations are complicated, and it's not always a matter of, oh, I've recognized it, there we go.
Well, I think what Charlene has spoke of is what we address in mental health first aid, and often people don't want to seek help because of the stigma that surrounds mental illnesses, and people don't want to be labeled as broken or crazy or that there's something wrong with them. And so often people don't seek help because of the stigma that's associated with mental illness. But often once people receive a diagnosis, just like with any illness, remaining compliant with a treatment plan is really important in order to maintain recovery. So, you know, but I think speaking from that, being the loved one of somebody with a mental illness, I think that we need to have communities who gather around people with physical illnesses, also gather around people who are experiencing mental illnesses. And so often we don't have that support system in place to help provide that support when you have a loved one who's dealing with bouts of depression or things of that nature. So I really can, you know, relate to the caller, and you know, one of the things we do want to emphasize, though, with a class like Mental Health First Aid is, though you will learn about signs and symptoms and warning signs and risk factors, you will not walk out with the ability to be able to diagnose someone with a mental illness. So that's one thing we try to really clarify, is that our goal is to provide you information, but then through your own self-study and through seeking professional help, that's where the diagnosis comes from.
Charlene, I also want to kick it a little bit. I've really admired the fact that you're actually a huge support already in what you've talked about, but you're doing some of the mental health first aid techniques already. You're asking him, your husband, to find other supports. They need those supports to get through this. It's something that doesn't end overnight. It's a long, and you're already seeing the patterns. And in mental health first aid, we'll talk about the resource. The resources, we would prevent the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, which is 24 hours if he gets to the point that he's suicidal. When they're not suicidal, you've already started the listening non-judgmentally. You're supporting him and finding those resources, and just continue what you're doing in supporting him and finding the other supports and listening to him.
I'm really struck about what you're talking about in terms of this idea, as one of the themes in this conversation about, or in this training, is about kind of a directness, a kind of a direct conversation, or kind of like taking on some of these issues that may come up with a family or loved one, like head on, essentially.
It's hard. If you don't mind, I'm going to share a quick story where we took in, she was a freshman in college about 7 years ago, and some of her peers were concerned about her. She was over-medicating on sleeping aids. Some of her roommates were labeled her as drama queen. She was just trying to get attention. But the underlying issue was depression, anxiety. She was in a city that she was not familiar with. She was anxious. She was estranged from her family. We ended up taking her in.
You personally, or you the...
My husband and I took her in. She started the non-suicidal self-injury, the cutting, which I had no experience with. And through life experience, and what worked is that non-suicidal self-injury, understanding the underlying. One of the things that we try to teach is to see the person first. Don't reduce somebody to their signs and their symptoms of their illness, and respect that that person has an underlying, especially the non-suicidal. There's a reason they're cutting. And I never understood until I saw her cut and understand the anguish and the pain that she was experiencing. The cutting releases endorphins and actually felt better to her. It was a whole new experience, and understanding that talking to her directly actually helped.
So it's a lot about looking at kind of the underlying issues versus kind of these symptoms coming
out. Absolutely, and hearing.
Well, Beth Yoderstein with Wyandotte Center, who is kind of leading an expansion of mental health first aid in the Kansas City metro area, and Jermaine Alberti, mental health first aid training director at the Missouri Institute of Mental Health, who's kind of training the trainers. Thank you so much for joining us on Central Standard.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Earlier in the hour, we were joined by Dr. John Rapley and Kevin Robertson discussing dental health. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the challenges of providing care for aging parents. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next with a look at food waste plus Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Fort. I'm Alana Gordon, and this is Central Standard, and I've always wanted to say this on the air, so I will. To health with it. We'll be right back.